Would you introduce yourselves, please?
Hello, I'm Leah from the Mysterines.
And I am Paul, also from the Mysterines.
Let's see. We'll go against Liverpool versus Manchester 2020. Paul was added. Your dad has a little bit of musical pedigree, this Sound of Guns thing. You have lots of friends in high places. So, you know, Mr. Weller, and you have people that are very fond of you. That makes you very important. This is a description that I found. Sleeve tattooed, raven haired, and let's see, what was the other part of this? An armored Brit. That was great. Yeah.
Is that about
us?
Was that you saying it?
Or is that about me?
Yes. That's about you.
Sleeve tattooed.
Yeah, no, that's a description of you. I'm telling you.
I mean,
you won a literary contest at age 8.
Yes, I did actually. I won a few.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that.
I won them all.
You have PJ Harvey hanging in your rehearsal studio. See, I've got it all.
Yeah.
So you know what? There's nothing left to talk about. We're done.
Yeah.
it's been really, really fun. Three things you don't want interrupted: sex, artistic flow, and a good meal, right?
Yes.
That's pretty much
They're
it.
They're all pretty similar
that's
as
pretty,
well.
Pretty much, well, we're not going to, I can't discuss that with you politely. But in any case, making a record where you had to be on and off, making it cohesive, having a plan, that's tricky, tricky, tricky stuff. And you've talked about that a lot. Mm-hmm. But what I really want to concentrate on is how it became cohesive. And I have a feeling it's that woman who was the producer who kind of glued it together. But I want the two of you to kind of talk about that with each other because, mm-hmm. again, it's patented. It was brutal. It was horrendous. We did some work. We're locked down. Then we did some work and we're locked down. That's out there. But I'm more interested in how you actually got there.
Talking about like the interruption of the artistic flow, I entirely agree with that, especially when with writing and creating something. But it sort of worked in a way that it was being interrupted, because for me, as a writer, it sort of, I knew that like the narrative of the album wasn't sort of concluded yet, and a lot of the songs were from a while ago, and they sort of needed to be figured out in, you know, a new setting, in a new...
Yeah, what were you, 16 when you wrote some of those songs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Under Your Skin is the oldest song on there, and then Still Call You Home, they were written around a similar time, 16, 17.
Wow.
So, you know, when I wrote those songs, there was no talk about a record happening. There was, you know, I wasn't writing for a record. You know, the band wasn't complete. I don't think we'd even toured that much at that point. So bringing those songs back from the grave almost was sort of how we made the album cohesive, I guess. And we extended the narrative to make it, you know, that's why it felt so, you know, it took so long literally, but it also felt so long emotionally, because you know you're taking steps back, way back into like the past to make them relevant for the future or the present.
And as someone who joined the band, how long did you join the band before recording started?
So I joined in the January 2020.
Wow.
And then
holy moly,
about three,
trial by fire, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah.
And then about 3 weeks later I was on tour, and then a week after that, COVID happened, and then by like, I think the first time we went into the studio was June.
Yeah.
So like, in the space of 6 months, I joined, toured, and then started making the record.
Man, that's a life test, isn't
it? It's funny, we were literally talking about that before, and like, I never really considered that when, you know, you and Cal joined, about how sort of
fast it was.
Yeah, overwhelming it could have been for both of you to be like, right, you're on tour now, you're doing this, and it's like,
I think because me and Callum have been playing
separately,
like I'd been in bands since I was like same age as you, like 15, and I'd done like toilet tours, you like the Mystery, and it was obviously like another level, but we'd been doing that anyway. And I think when we joined that band, it was like, okay, let's go, because that's what we've been wanting to get to. Do you know what, like a band that would like actually doing something and not just playing the same venues week in with week out to three people.
The first thing someone does when they see you and they hear you is they go, oh, okay, some woman, she came up. So formal training, where did you learn to play, you know, writing? You know, were you just a wunderkind and your parents recognized it and said, we better get her some training here? How did that happen?
I never had any.
Nothing whatsoever?
Training. No, I've never had. I think I had one guitar lesson in year three, which went terribly. And yeah, I was about nine. My dad taught me like a few chords on guitar, but he just sort of left me to it, to be honest.
When did you know you had something, that this is what you were going to be doing?
When it was the only thing that consumed my time.
That was it? It was just obsessive at that point?
Well, it was the only thing that I wanted to. I never really thought about it as like, this is what I want to do, I want to do this, and this is the plan. It was just, I just did it.
Fiction is a pretty good place to be. You're surrounded by some pretty nifty people. Mm-hmm. But one of the things you have talked about is the obligations now. Because going from being, and you still are technically an indie band.
Well, when we met Jim, we just, you know, really clicked with his whole sort of perspective on music and his passion towards not just our music, but, you know, everything that he loves, whether it's on his label or not. He's a massive music fan. So I think that was super important for us to work alongside someone that, you know, wasn't just viewing what we were doing as a potential, you know, money-making thing or marketing thing or whatever. It's important that everyone who works with us on the basis of the, like, what we're creating. So, which he did. And then he bought a beer for us and crisps.
And crisps, yeah. That was the selling point for me.
That's all it takes, right?
That's all it was.
Yeah. That's all it takes. Where was that? Was that it? Where's the beer and crisps? When I go back, I know where I should get the best crisps.
I don't know where he got them from.
This is important.
He dropped it by the studio.
We'd already started the record, and we weren't signed at this point, and we'd already started the record. And he came in to meet us just to kind of have a listen and see what it was like. And he had a big, massive beer. Big massive bag of beers and a big massive bag of crisps.
And what a way to show up.
That's the guy.
Yeah. And he showed up on a bike as well.
He did, yeah.
What a way to show up. So when someone tries to pigeonhole you, what do you say to them?
I never really pay attention. I don't know anything about genres.
But if somebody asks you, someone is like, so just, guitar rock, so Paul and, you know.
I think it's just expected, you know. And I'm not... Early on, I probably would get angry at it, or like, I'm not angry.
Defensive.
But if they're, you know, willing to narrow their own perspective into genres, then they don't deserve the actual explanation of what the music means to us. So
that's very kind of you, by the way. I don't want to go down influences. I want to get into songwriting and the whole idea that the lyrics in the music can exist in different spaces and then come together.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think that's what, I'm going to guess that that's what you'd rather hear than, so how do you write the songs?
Definitely. Yeah. I definitely think that. I remember sort of weirdly the first time I was confronted with that exact concept you just said about the music and the lyrics existing in different places and coming together was... My dad told me when I was like nine, he showed me the Smiths song Girlfriend in a Coma.
Oh my gosh.
And
yes.
He was like, he just played it to me and he was like, is that a happy song or a sad song? And I was like, well, because I was a kid, I was like, oh, it's a happy song. And then he showed me the lyrics and was like, this is, you know, sort of juxtaposition. And like, he just left it as that. Like, he didn't teach me how to do that or anything. But I just remember that moment very clearly, and when I'm writing, even now, I sort of go back to that headspace and sort of think about how many different sort of opposites I can bring into a song, or, you know.
It's happy, happy, happy. It's got all the things. It's got the hooks. It's got mm-hmm. the riffs. It's got all the toys. And then you walk away from it and go, I feel really weird.
Yeah.
That's what we wanted.
100%.
But that's the greatest thing ever. The word dark gets painted across your persona every 15 seconds. Like, that word is probably used in the language for you and this band more than anything.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. But I maintain that you're not a dark person. You're not looking at me right now and very depressed and, oh my gosh, you might be tired from getting off a plane, but he's smiling. You don't look like you're in pain 24/7.
You'd be surprised.
Me too. You didn't have to just clean this studio with all the crap.
Oh, yeah.
But, and I'm not going to go places I shouldn't go. Yeah, I am. I don't think you had a dark childhood. I think you had the kind of childhood I did. But what do you think added up to who you are now? That everybody is so busy painting you as dark? Or do you prophesize it yourself?
I don't really perceive anything of my childhood as dark at all.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you know, everyone's got their own perception on what dark may be. And perhaps for someone else, some experiences could be considered whatever dark means. I mean, that's such a large spectrum.
Right?
For me, dark is the worst it can get. And, you know, it never got that bad. So
okay.
I'm pretty lucky with the you know, the parents I have and the family I have. I'm not an only child. And it's when if I'm writing, Paul knows this and has seen this, like I have to go into a completely different headspace, and sometimes it's really taxing emotionally. It can be really, you know, detrimental physically, spiritually.
What's the latest in the dream? Is there something new in the dream diary?
Me? Oh, yeah. I've been dreaming a lot recently.
So what's the new? Because maybe this will tell us where the world is going or something.
What have I been dreaming
about?
Well,
I don't want to know.
Yeah, I've been talking to Paul about some of my dreams that I had that, you know.
Oh, I don't want to know?
Well,
yes, I do.
I won't go into explicit details of one, but I sort of had a dream about a film that was being made that I was watching being made, but also was in at the same time, and then become very real, and everything that happened under that circumstance was no longer a film and it was real.
Oh, isn't that scary?
It was pretty weird.
Playing live and recording live and working with Catherine to do that, that's really hard work. So how did you know, or how did she tell you, yep, you've got the take? And was it much earlier than you thought it was gonna be that you're like, no, I need to, I'm a perfectionist. I need to do 3 or 4 more of these.
Mm-hmm. Catherine is very, very skillful and intuitive at not basing a take off perfection, but a perfection that sort of enters a realm of feeling rather than, you know, everything was, you know, bang on the click, or it was, you know, the sound of the guitars is perfect the whole time. She's very good at finding beauty in the stuff that shouldn't have happened. And, you know, she was also very sneaky a lot of the time.
She was,
because
yeah.
She made me do guide vocals. And I wouldn't even, like, you know, I wouldn't think about it. And I think that's sort of the beauty of it behind it. And she just kept all the guide vocals as the main vocal and didn't tell me. But she'd make me do main vocal takes and just wouldn't use any of them. But she, like, that had a lot of trust in her to do that. And I respected her a lot for that. And I think it was a very feminine approach to sort of the intuition and the feeling of the record and sort of how it made it, you know, sit and think and sort of, yeah, she was pensive the whole time of the record, but also very emotionally
invested.
Yeah.
It took me a while to get used to that because I was going into it definitely more on the perfectionist side of things. Mm. And I'd, you know, you'd know when it was a good take, but then you listen back to it and you wouldn't be aware of what take was which. Mm-hmm. And it took me a while to like trust it. And like,
I think, yeah,
that was the take.
I think that's a good thing about the feminine masculine sort of part of it, is that you probably naturally be more inclined to being like, it, you know, because that's sort of the
probably, yeah.
That. Men want to fix things.
Yeah.
Well, no, we do. By our nature.
Yeah.
We're the ones.
They want to do the best they can do.
Well, we also want to. We also want to not fix things as in I'm hanging a painting.
Yeah, yeah.
But fix things as my relationship went wrong. I know I shouldn't be going back begging, but I will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I'm not afraid to. Because I want to make it right, and not that women don't want to.
No, I think with
but it's a different way.
With the feminine approach, it's a lot more based off intuition, based off, you know, feeling, you know, women, maternal creatures. So that's just like a natural thing. If it looks good, if it sounds good, you know, if you go back into like sort of early Homo sapien behavior, women just, you know, if it looks good, I can reproduce with it. Like, mm-hmm. or, you know, it's sort of that wild part of the brain that, you know, and I think that's why it works. I think that's why it worked with Catherine, having that sort of like no direction, but it was all based on feeling. Yeah. And I like sort of putting you through that as well.
Yeah, yeah. It was definitely a learning curve for me, especially as a drummer.
When you talk to each other and you're sitting down and you're hanging out and you're back in the pub and you're doing all the things you're not supposed to do and you're whatever, what do you talk about in terms of not what's next, but what you want it to be? And do you talk about it?
Yeah, me and Paul spend a lot of time talking about the next creative step. To the point where we drive each other insane.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Yeah, I love it.
But it's important to both of us. And, you know, it's really nice to work together and have that trust, because especially for me, it was really when we added Paul and Carl to the band, I saw it's sort of like being in like a new relationship almost, and being like, okay, they need to see this side of me.
Right,
and
right
now Paul definitely has trust, you know, it's nice to have that trust. 100%.
Mm-hmm. I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and what it is two of your songs on the outside, and then you get to make the ingredients in between from other musicians and bands.